session number 22659, Reel 1.
This is the first reel of a taped interview with George Wright in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 20th of the 11th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. George, could we begin the interview by you telling us your full name and your rank?
On retirement.
On retirement.
I'm George William Wright of One Nest Road, Abercross. My present appointment is, or was, Lieutenant Colonel from the Australian Regular Army.
Where and when were you born?
Now, I was born in James Street, Northbridge, as it is now called, at 97 James Street. The father was in those days running a factory there of wood turning. And from then on, he moved further west along the road to 157, which was just west of Lake Street in James Street, to a much bigger place.
What year was it that you were born?
Now, I was born in 1911 on the 29th of April, and we stayed down at 97 for a few years before we moved out to further west along James Street, and I went to school at the local school, of course, which was James Street School in those days, and from there down to the junior tech. But finished school at the great age of 14 in those days, and started work with the father, and of course that was about 1925, and the depression was starting to come along, which it did. And our main product in those days was car hubs, which, as one realises now, that the old horse and cart is not so popular. And the old father, he just didn't push things ahead. And we stuck to the wood turning, plus billiard table making. And then things got worse, and we had to move out again. So we went out to Carr Street, Leaderville, and established a place out there in 1927. Now,
what do you think would be your strongest memories of growing up in Perth?
Well,
is that where you lived, in James Street, or was that just where the factory was?
We lived with the factory in three places, down at 97 and 167, then out to 179 Carr Street, Leaderville. We got a house there, and we had about a third of an acre of land at the back from which we built a factory. But things didn't go along too well, and I had become interested in the army as a, well, it's a matter of fact. It was compulsory training days then. This was 1928. And I had mates who weren't interested in the army, and of course it was compulsory, and I hadn't reported. And one day the old father said to me, "Have you reported yet?" I said, "No." Well, he said, "Bloody well, get down there now." And that was Toledo Drool. And I reported that, and from then on I stuck with the army. I was doing other things too.
Had your father been in the army?
Well, do you want me to? Well, my father he'd been with the army, as a matter of fact. He was born in an army tent in Kent, in England, although he was a Scot from Kirkcaldy. He was born in an army tent. His father was a regimental tailor of a Scottish regiment. I couldn't tell you what the regiment is now, but at any rate, the control over our family was very close, and we didn't run wild, I'll admit. And I got caught up with this compulsory training as a cadet, and served down at Leadable Drill Hall in Vincent Street, and we went there for 12 months, and then of course we went on to the CMF, Citizen Military Forces.
Before we talk about that, did your father serve in the First World War?
No, he didn't. Well, he was too old for one thing, and I think physically he was a bit out, you know. And
did anyone?
He was born in 1875. The father and
what of other relatives? Did you know of any other relatives that served in the First World War?
In ours, Now, I couldn't tell you his name, but there was only one that I can remember, and he lived in Melbourne. Well, the father came out to Melbourne, and of course, depression. He came out to Melbourne, and there was a depression over there, and when he was old enough, about the 20 mark, he came over to the West. And although he was apparently going to get married, but he told Mum at the time, well, he'd come back. Well, he came over to Western Australia by boat, and he came in steerage, and he was that crook, sick, that he decided he wouldn't travel that way again. Well, of course, in those days there was no other way. So, except that he was a keen bike rider. And on the 28th of March in 1898, he set up on a push bike to ride to Melbourne. But he was crook on the way across with water, and he served, he got as far as Adelaide, and served some time in hospital there, then went on to Melbourne and got married. And then they sailed back here, a pair of them.
I'm interested in the fact that you went on to the CMF, but I'm also wanting to discuss with you the general attitude that people had towards service in the army.
Well,
was the general attitude towards war around about the time you were joining the cadets?
Well, we were hostile to it. What I mean, it was the things that had happened, you know, they were such a long time ago now. And
you were against?
Of course, when I was in the cadets, you see, I said, no, things were reasonable then. You see, that was 1928. Well, before anything happened, it was 39, you see. Time's changed.
What was the attitude, for instance, of the First World War and what that had meant?
Well, as far as I can see, but of course we didn't get around much as kids, and anyone that had people serving, we were very considerate towards them. And there was all sorts of things done at school, such as collecting and making, camp kettles or some blooming thing, or you know, food stuff that we used to make up, and knit socks. Well, as I was just going to show you there, spinning wheels. That was one thing the old man, I didn't think of that. That was one thing the old man did, was make up spinning wheels for them. Of course, he sold them at a very reasonable price. They're only about, well, of course, money was different then, but they're only about 3 quid each. Right? And, I thought, did you see that picture? With the, yeah. So, not that we considered that we wanted a war. The war was a nuisance, but we had to support those that were being involved in it, of our own people. And
where did the loyalties lie in relation to King and Country and Australia in relation to the First World War, do you think?
Oh, well, with the general public. Different to what it is now. Hey, with the politicians wanting to be independent. He said, well, that's one way of putting it. Hey. Yeah, so.
Do you recall what may have been spoken about the conditions of the First World War just shortly after it? Did you ever
Not really.
When you were in the cadets, did anyone speak to you about what the First World War was like and things like that, do you think?
Oh, no. There was not much said about it. Well, even our fellas now, they don't say much about it. Hey, what are we gone? Hey, well, what's the use of it? Yes, and of course the difference in age, you see, when the First War finished, in my case I was about 7, you see, and I remember the day as well as anything.
Describe it for us.
We got it. Oh, running along behind us was the railway yards. And whenever troops went out there on the train, there was tootle, 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 you see. Cock-a-doodle-doo, you see. Well, of course, there was a hell of a noise. On this day when it finished, and we made inquiries, we found out what it was. So, dropped everything, including my mother, and I was home, I must have been home, but Mum, still with her apron on, and myself and one of the other boys, up the town and I went straight to that. Everyone was happy as hell. But no, it's it was, well, there was a great president that was finished. Well, up to that point, it was finished. And, of course, well, we got down to work again. Of course, well, when I say work, well, I was only 7. Back to school again.
What did you get told at school, do you think, as you grew up, about what the First World War had meant? People talk of it being
very little.
People talk of it being the war to end all wars.
Oh yes, oh that was mentioned, you know, but
why was that mentioned, do you think?
Well, because some bloody politician said so. No, we weren't saying that because we didn't know. Right? It was only these people supposed to know.
People talk of the atrocities, the trenches, the horrible conflict that was to go on. Were you aware of just how awful it had been, do you think?
Oh, well, we didn't know that these things had happened. Well, you know, the fellas been hit by gunshot and stuff like that, and all I could find was the bits and pieces, right? And things and the dreadful things that happened to them. Right? But and also, another big thing I'll say was those fellows that came back gas affected. Right? And I know quite a few people, fellows, suffered with that. And, oh yes.
Were there lots of wounded soldiers that you came across in Perth at the time after the First World War that were either affected by gas or other wounds?
Well, I didn't know many, but you'd hear about them. Eh? And, of course, there were a couple of, I think there was only one hospital, the old Fremantle Base Hospital. I was down there a few times. There were some friends that had been knocked or something wrong with them. They were down there being treated. And I couldn't tell you the exact spot where it was, unless it's in the prison, where the prison hospital is now. But, of course, it was classed as the old base hospital. And, yeah.
What sorts of condition were they in?
The troops? Well, some had bits and pieces missing, you know, parts of limbs and things like that, but otherwise they were, and the worst ones, I think, was those affected by the gas. Because it hung around so long without any healing. And, although they looked all right for a while, some of them, because they had spasms of where they were crook.
So tell us, what was it like then to be in the cadets and then in the citizens military force?
In the citizen force as well. It was quite all right.
What did you learn in the cadets as a young bloke?
Well, I learned to shoot. I finished up as one of the best, army rifle shots here, and that's influenced me. When I say influenced me, what they did with me.
Why do you
say even that? Right up to the day I finished. That's 55. They used to use me to test weapons and things like that. See?
When you were to join the cadets, I understand that there was, and you mentioned that your father had urged you to get along.
Yeah. Well, it was compulsory. Otherwise,
why do you think it was compulsory?
Because it was the law.
Why do you think that it was important that people join?
The law of the land. It used to be at 14 years. And then they cut it out. and then I think it went to 16, and then to 17. And from 17, at 18, you went to the citizen military forces, which was the type, well, age them up, and you went to camp, and that. I used to.
The fact that there was this compulsory situation with people having to join the cadets and then go on to citizen military force, what do you think that says about the general attitude towards the military taken on by the Australian government and therefore the community at large at that particular time?
Well, in a majority of cases, it was accepted. But there were members of the those people called up that didn't like it at all. Well, they would object to anything. Yeah. And that did occur.
What?
And they.
How were those people seen?
Well, what they did, they took them to the courts and they were charged and they served down at Port Forrest at Fremantle to cut out their time. Yeah, that's. Action was taken to until the compulsory training was cut out, you see, which was in, I think it was November 1929.
29, we're talking the Depression, the Great Depression coming on.
Yeah.
How do you think that affected the community?
Well,
how did it affect your father's business, for instance?
Well, I'll admit my father wasn't very keen as a businessman, just between you and I, but he was a keen tradesman. Right? Also, although he was invested in the business, he used to work all of the time. Well, he even got down to finally 1926 of being the mould tester here. Now,
so the effects of the Depression, how do you think that generally made itself shown within the community?
Well, it was serious, and we were limited in our activities, and of course it was the days before the popularity of motor cars and things like that, although there were more motorbikes around then, but there was also plenty of push bikes. The average person was concerned, but they existed on, well, I could say, you might say anything, but that's, I mean, things of quality and that. They had they'd work for shorter times and that, not like they're pushing at the present moment.
How did it affect you? How tough did your family go through the Depression?
Well, we finished up, but we split up. The elder brother, he went out to another furniture factory, and the brother next to me, he stayed with the old man wood turning, and of course in 1928 I went into the regular army, and it wasn't 1928, in 19 28, I went into the CMF, and 1936, well, as far as we were concerned, well, it affected us right to then, and I took off, went into the regular army, you see. And,
in relation to the Depression and how it affected home in Australia, did you have any understanding of how it might be affecting European countries at all? Places like Germany, for instance?
No, not exactly. Because in those days, all there was a radio. And a lot of us, well, we used to make a little crystal set out of a cotton reel and a bit of galena. I made quite a few of them. And, we did make some radio sets. The old man made one up and he managed to get in contact with South Africa. And also, just by the way, about 1906, I think, he built parts under a fellow by the name of Peter Kennedy. He was, the director of Post and Telegraphs here, a personal set with parts that he got from, what's the Italian name? Connected with the radio originally, and they made this set, or at least the old man did the work that he could do, wood to make parts out of wood, and then they treated them in shellac and wax, because it wasn't the plastic stuff that you can get now, you see, and they established the first radio set that they had here from, I believe it was from the town hall, Old Hay Street there, down to what used to be the post office on the corner of the terrace and Barrack Street. And yes, that was the first one there. So,
what were some of the things that you heard possibly on the radio about how the rest of the world was coping with it, the Depression?
What? With the Depression? Well, just between you and I didn't worry much about it because I realised what it was. Because I wasn't having such a good time myself.
Okay.
We used to limit the food that we could use, even though we're in business, right? The old factory, that was very much out of date. No electric motors. We had a 27 horsepower suction gas engine. We used to have to get a truckload of charcoal out of the bush and pick it up on a horse cart, horse and lorry, and take it round to James Street, and then you shove it in the hopper, and it'd burn, and the gas would start run the engine. That's when you pull the flywheel over, of course. Yeah. Well,
the situation in relation to the First World War and how Germany had been treated, and then the effects of the Depression to places like Germany. One of the reasons why Hitler was to come along.
Well, you see,
were you aware of that sort of effect at all?
We didn't study that business of what was being done in Germany. There wasn't the communication in those days, you see. And even the radio was that poor. The army radio was poor. See? They had nothing, practically. There were certain people, of course, they knew.
What people?
Ones higher up. Tied up with the civilian requirements, population, but not to the, not to the average individual.
So the average individual didn't worry about the effects that the Versailles treaties had on them.
Not until they got out of work, which happened quite frequently, and they had nothing to get stuff. And they used to get on the dole, or food stuff,